Hey guys, thank you so much for stopping by Legend Church's weekly podcast. Just a quick reminder, you can check us out at legendchurch.com, find us on Facebook and Instagram, and Sunday mornings in Madisonville. But hey, without further ado, set the cruise control, start mountain run, or grab a drink, and let's talk about all things Jesus.
Yeah, I had this long week where I was teaching an art camp all week from like 8 to 3. And so it was kind of really busy for me anyways, and it was kind of exhausting. But I had like a whole sermon done before this week, and then I texted Jason literally on Friday. I was like, hey, I just rewrote the entire thing because I read this verse in the Bible. I'm getting ready to read it, and I read it. And I was like, I have to talk about this because I'd read it before, obviously, but like, but I read it before and just it hit me this week as more than it normally would. But anyways, I want to read it for you guys. So just take a second and listen. But it's Paul writing to the church in Corinth, and he's writing to a church. So this is for everyone, not an individual, just to these people. And he says, for we are all baptized by one Spirit so as to form one body. And whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free, we are all given one Spirit to drink. And just as a body, though one, has many parts, but all its many parts form one body. And so it is with Christ. And even so, the body is not made up of one part, but of many parts. So if the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. Or if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has placed the parts in the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. Man, I'm going to read that again because just think about this metaphor as the body of a church for every single one of you here. In fact, God has placed the parts in the body, every one of you, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. And then we end with this. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part of the body suffers, every part suffers with it. When you get hurt, when your body hurts, the whole thing hurts. If I get hurt somewhere, my whole body shuts down. Especially if you get burnt. If you get burnt, man, everything hurts. Outside of Kim, who's been burnt here, there was this one time, Kristen hates this story, that Graydon, our 18-year-old, was just like 3, and we had some friends come over, and they brought their little kid, and I put the kids, because I'm a responsible father, in the sandbox. And then the moms left, they went to go somewhere, and so it was just me and this other guy, and I just did all this yard work, and so I had all this like fresh green shrubbery, but I didn't want it in my yard. This is ridiculous, you can't have that. And so I made sure the kids stayed in the sandbox. I was like, I'm just gonna burn it. Let's burn it up, it'll be done. This is awesome. And I do know that you're supposed to use oil or some sort of slow burning thing to try to burn it, but I didn't have that. I had a big thing of gasoline though, so I took the gasoline, and I doused this big, I mean, it was a big pile, and because I'm responsible, I made a little, like, line, so I could, because I'm like, I'm not going to light it right here, I'll light it right here, and I decided that's what I was, let me make sure the kids are still there in the box, and I bent over, because I'm responsible, I, like, kind of did one of these, and I lit it. And what happened, I did not foresee coming, and I felt like, literally, like, the world stopped, like, the kids up from the sandbox. I don't know what the other dude was doing, just watching, thinking it's a bad idea. He didn't say anything, that's for sure. And it went into the And instead of just, you know, burning bush sort of thing happening, it disappeared for a second. And I heard this like rumbling, like from the bowels of the earth, like this, boom, 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 boom. And the pile started shaking, and then it opened like a mouth, and like a wizard's fireball came at me and hit me. And I like, I blocked it like that. And it hit me, like the whole thing hit me. And I was freaking out, but then I looked and like, you know, I didn't have any hair on my arms or leg, but I was like, hey, I think I'm cool. I did it, man. I'm good. I'm good. And then like 30 seconds later, it just burns. And so I had to text Kristen, like, can you get some aloe? And she's like, what do you need aloe for? I'm like, just don't ask me about my aloe problems. I don't need you to get, and she knew. But like that whole 2 weeks, like my whole body hurt. And I got like my whole body got sick. When one part of the body gets burned, man, the whole body hurts. If we're looking at the metaphor, which is what it's designed to be for us as a church legend, not even church whole, but just this, when one of us are hurt, when one of us is hurting, the whole body should hurt. It's a good lesson. This is not what the sermon's about, but the good lesson is about how involved and engaged we are in each other's lives. Man, we need to know. We need to know what's going on, because we can, then that's how it happens. If we don't know, if we're just, hey, I just show up and do my thing, man, we don't know that when one part of the body hurts, other parts of the body get hurt. I like the analogy of the burn, man, because we've all been burnt by a person, by a loved one, by a family member who's really hurt us. We've been burnt by jobs and organizations. And unfortunately, we have been, a lot of us have been burnt by the church, right? I mean, the church burns people. And it's hard. It's not good. And we, and just like Monty was saying, like things we have to apologize for that we weren't really a part of. Man, but it burns people. And what do you do when the body burns itself, right? So I want to switch gears for a second and talk about another story. And we're going to hopefully I will tie these things together. We'll see. We don't know. We never know. I never know how it's going to turn out. So there was someone in our church I met with a couple weeks ago, and she was like, hey, I read the Bible a lot. I kind of get something out of it, kind of don't. I don't know. And she's like, I like to read it, and I like to look for like the antidote for the day. And I challenged her with something that a seminary or a Bible college professor challenged me with. I was in school, and I'm like 20, and everything is about like Greek and, you know, what does this mean for our lives? And he says, hey, this your assignment this whole week is just to leave here and go find a place and just read it. Like, read it. Don't look for answers. Don't look for reflection. Don't look for anything. Just read it as, if it's poetry, read it as poetry. If it's narrative, read it as story, and just go do that. This is why Bible college was really easy. Yeah, I did it. And that's really how you get grades. But I did. I remember, and it, for me, it was probably one of the most life-changing spiritual experiences I ever had. It was the first time I saw it as, oh, I love this. I fell in love with it that day. And so I challenged her. I was like, hey, you should do this. And after I said it, I left the coffee shop, and I was like, you know, I should do that. I haven't done that in a long time. Like, I think about sermons when I think about other things. I haven't done that in a long time. And so I started, and I do the same thing I always do. I go in this probably every 3-year cycle of, like, I should do that. And I always start the same place. I start with Joshua, and I go to 2 Chronicles, because to me that is the best part of the entire scriptures, because it's this awesome narrative. It's Game of Thrones. It is Game of Thrones to its, I mean, George R. R. Martin should have like had a copyright, because, man, if you, they should just take that part of the Bible and write, this is Game of Thrones on it, and just change the names, and we got it. I love it. I love it. Best sermon series I ever did, Todd will tell you, was talking about that for like 5 weeks in a row, because I love that story. And so I did. I started. I was like, oh, I'm going to do my thing. And real quick, I'm going to go through these two characters. So the story of that whole narrative is that you have, you know, you have Israel, you have these people who were wandering the desert for 40 years, and it's really weird. They're a really weird nation, because you can imagine if you were another nation, other cities, they knew. It's not like it's not a large area. Hey, did you know that there's some weirdos like wandering the desert? Like, that's weird. That's odd. For 40 years, man, these people have been there for decades. That's weird. So there's this weird group that was wandering, didn't have a home or a location. And then you get this story where they go and they go into the promised land, right? They attack and they go in and they have their own spot. They have their own land finally. And they have their own kingdom. And then for a while they had Moses, and Moses died, and he was like their guy, and they need a leader. And so there was these judges, there were women and men who came up to lead everyone. It was, you know, you kind of get some fun stories out of that. But then eventually this whole group is like, hey, we need a king. We need, like, all the other nations have a king. We need a king because we can't do this. We have to be our own kingdom. And God's like, no, you don't want a king, because if you have a king, that comes taxes. If you have a king, then your sons are going to made into soldiers and they're going to die. If you have a king, your women are turned into slaves. And they were like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. And so they do. They're like, yeah, we're into that. And so they asked for a king. And so they're sent this dude Samuel, who was the kingmaker. He's this cool dude. And he goes, and there's these 12 tribes. You know, the 12 tribes of Israel live in 12 different spots. Or actually 11, in 11 different spots. Because the Levites don't. And then, he goes to Benjamin. Benjamin becomes the king tribe. They're like the Baratheons, if you like Game of Thrones. Like, oh, yes, this is, like, we've become elected for the king. And he goes and he finds this dude named Saul. And Saul is, like, tall and handsome. And he's, like, this guy. And Saul becomes the first king. And he's really bad at it. He's not a bad guy. I love him. He's actually my favorite, ninth favorite Bible character. Do you guys have that list? I like him a lot. He's just not, but I love him. But he's the worst king. He's so afraid of the people. He's so afraid of, and he just does he follows the rules as much as he can. He tries to, like, hey, I'm doing the things, but he's just no good. He's the worst. He's just no good at it. He's got the son Jonathan, who's really awesome. He's like a ninja, but he's just really bad, and so he's not doing well. And so then the Samuel, the kingmaker, goes and gets David, right? With just King David. I mean, I love the story. I can't tell the story without telling other stories. I'm trying to be really, like, concise with it, because you should just go read it for yourselves, because it's so much fun. But anyways, King David, so Samuel goes, he's like, hey, we're the shepherd boy. We've heard the stories, the David and Goliath stories. Hey, this guy's going to be king now. And David comes. David's like he's the golden child. Is there a golden child in your family? I was the golden child. No matter what, you're just like that. Everyone else gets in trouble, but the golden child, man, they just, like, they're gold. That's David. He doesn't do anything right as far as the rules, breaks them all. But man, he is the only one with the title man after God's own heart. There's something. I mean, he's awesome. Like, you love this dude. And he becomes best friends with Jonathan, Saul's son. Saul and Jonathan are killed. Man, this is bad for him. They don't write, I hope you know this about the scriptures, but they're not writing this stuff down thousands of years ago so that, oh, well, now you need to know the lineage of the history. That's not the main point. The main point of any story written down, any story told, any story passed on from parent to child, the point is, man, I'm telling you something about God here. I'm telling you something about God. So when we read the stories of Saul and David, and you should totally read it because it's totally good, you're seeing two people that are compared, two kings, and there's a comparison here, and there's something we're supposed to learn from Saul and David. Saul, he just doesn't have it, but we don't know why, because he's trying really hard, and you love him. And David, he's not trying that hard, and he's nailing it. And the word that I take is faith. There's something about faith in this story. There's Saul, who just doesn't have it. He's doing the right things, though. He's saying the right things. He's going to Samuel the prophet. He's trying. He breaks accidentally some of the rules. I'm giving him that grace. And And he just, but he's afraid. He's filled with anxiety. He's filled with fear. He's filled with anger. He's filled with, what is it when you're always nervous? Jason, whatever you are. There you go. Anxiety, that word again. I just don't know that word. No, just kidding. You know, it's suspicious. He's just filled with that. He's got no faith. He's just not there. This God that he believes in, that's called him to be this thing. He's like, that thing is there, but it is not. It's not looking after me. And David's the opposite. He doesn't do any of the things right. He breaks the rules constantly. But man, he has nothing but reliance and faith that God is with him and in his world. Right? This is what we're supposed to see. We're supposed to read it and go, man, how often am I like Saul? And how do I want to be like David? This is the story, part of the story we're supposed to get. But it's all about faith and faith in God. And so that phrase alone, we should read it. And as good, curious people, we should ask questions about that. What does that mean? What is faith? What does it mean to have faith in God? Phrase alone can be triggering for a lot of us because a lot of people have used, I just have faith in God, as a really poor excuse to be better, to militarize something. Faith in God can remind us of people who said mean things to us or just represented something that was different. Do we get faith? How do we get faith? If I'm supposed to have this faith, what does that mean to get it? Does it just come to me? Is it part of what I am? Do we develop it? Do we lose it? Like there's this thing that I think we use in the religious or Christian circles. We use this word faith, but I don't know if we always really sit there and contemplate what it means. Because Paul's going to tell us, and especially talking about our virtues. So this whole sermon series has been like, whenever we meet God, meet Christ, meet Jesus, there's a moment where we're introduced, whether good or bad, and then there's when we die, what goes on in between, and that whole thing we can call faith. There's faith in there, and it's our big... So Paul's going to say, I mean, there's three things, faith, hope, and love. He's going to name those as probably the top three virtues, faith, hope, and love. And so faith, this is a non-humble brag, is my jam. Like, it's my thing. It's the only thing I've ever had where I feel like I nail 100%. Sounds better than it is. I'm going to say that that's a horrible thing in a second. But it is what I've, like, there are these things. Some of you may have had one of these, a spiritual gift inventory test. It's straight up like a Myers-Briggs test. And at the end, they're like, these are the 12 spiritual things that you have. And this is where you're good at. And you can be like, I rock it, love. Look at that, guys. Like, whatever. It was a dumb, dumb thing. But I took it and I rock it, faith, number one every time. But this faith, I've never known a moment in my life where I didn't 100% feel God there. I've never known a moment of doubt. When I was growing up as a Christian in the church world, my like rebellious time, but there was one time I remember being like, I'm going to like doubt it. I'm going to doubt it. I was like, this week, I'm going to probably say a cuss word. I'm a senior in high school. I'm a very late developer. And I'm like, I'm doubting because I missed one Wednesday night church. I was like, I'm not going tonight, mom and dad, and I drove somewhere. And then I felt so guilty. And I was like, I ain't missed church, and the youth group did something cool without me. Graydon, when he was 10, me and him, I like to, when I can corner my children with just me and them, I like to ask them about their thoughts of God. It's like, what are your thoughts of God? Because I'd really like to meet him. I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from. But I'd be like, tell me about God. What do you think? And I just like to hear. And when he was 10, I was like, man, like, I went up to him. I was like, hey, I just want to let you know that I know that mom and dad are Christian. Man, you don't got to be. That's that, man, whatever you choose, man. And he's like, I like it. I like the people at church. I was like, no, man, have some doubts. I know you got doubts. Just have them. And he's like, dad, I got it. I was like, but you got doubts, man. It's okay. I just want to let you know that it is okay. And he's like, he goes, dad, I see what you're doing. but I just want to let you know I like it. I like the thing. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to talk my kid out of this right now. I found myself doing that a lot, to not indoctrinate them. Like, man, you don't have to like that if you want to. But faith has always been the only thing that I look back. And for the longest time, I saw it as a gift. Like, oh, this is a gift. Because that's what they told me. I took that test, and like, this is your gift. And I actually don't think that's true at all. Because I thought, like, well, this is the one thing that I get to do. So I'm David of the story. Just kidding. I thought it was a gift, and then I kind of realized, like, no, you're not a unique snowflake. You're just, we'll go into that. But so we have this idea of faith, and it's hard. It is very hard, I think. And it's probably true of all times and all generations, but I can only talk about our life now. It is very hard, I think, in our world right now to see the world and have faith. It's difficult. I don't read the news. I don't do news. And you might think, oh, I don't either, but I really don't. Like, I only find out things from other people. My wife gets mad. She's like, you're stupid because you don't know this. And I'm like, you're right. I don't. She'll be like, did you hear about this? And I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know things. But for some reason, my internet this week decided to show me news. And I read the worst things that for the first time in my life where I was like, how do you redeem any of this? And I'm sure that's every week, right? Like, it's hard to look at our world and have faith in God, in a God that loves and is just and is all these things that we say. A couple weeks ago, our families were in town, mine and Kristen's families, and we decided to go downtown for a Taste of Grace. Sorry, look at that. It was an unintentional plug there. You can do that too. But Taste of Cincinnati was what I was thinking. We went downtown for that, and I don't know what the deal was, but literally every block was a giant, angry group of Christians yelling at everyone very aggressively about how we're all going to hell. Like, it was bad. And I kept apologizing, like, hey, guys, sorry, our city's not usually this religious. I don't know what the deal is. And so then Archer and I were going to go to the restroom at Fountain Square, and we made the mistake of, there was a dude, right? There was this dude, and he had this giant staff, like a huge one. And it had something on top on it, and I was like, I just wanted to see the staff. I was like, I love magical props, so this is cool. And so I made the eye contact, and he looked at me, and I was like, hey, I just wanted to see what was on your staff. And he ran to Archer and I, and he puts it in our face. He's like, touch it, touch my staff. And I'm like, I'm not touching your staff. And I got really uncomfortable, and he's yelling at us. He's like, are you going to heaven? I was like, yeah, I'm going. I'm in the thing. But I was wearing my rainbow glasses, and I was like, this guy does not think I'm going to the thing. I know that he doesn't. I'm out for him. And he's like, he doesn't believe me. And he starts like getting on my child. I am about to cry because I really, like, it's where I wish I was Jason. I actually texted him immediately, like, why aren't you here with me? Because, and this stuff never happened. They don't do that to the bearded dude. They do it to me where I'm like, why didn't I hit him? Why didn't I punch him in the throat? Or like, it could, but I was just like, let's just get away. Come on, child. And like, and it was, and he chased us for all, the whole, I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, and he was behind, and Archer was emotional. I was emotional. And my children, they don't know this part of Christianity. I've really blocked that from them. Like, I don't want them to know. And I saw that, and you could hear the streets talking about what's going on, this is ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And man, it is hard to have faith in a God when those are his representative, its representatives, right? It's hard. Three years ago, our church got to do something at Pride that happened yesterday, and there was this organization, Love Boldly, and they have this cool display where they have all these interactive things where people can write their experiences, and it's really cool. And we volunteered, and I got there, and I was like, hey, I'll just do the thing, whatever, just tell me what to do, and I'll do it. And so they gave me a bucket, and I had to stand out in the crowd with a bucket that said I'm sorry on it. And then inside the bucket was all these postcards that people, churches all over the city, had written very loving and beautiful, nice things. And I was supposed to say, I'm sorry, and give everyone a postcard. And there was a ton of reactions. Some people were like, oh, thank you. And some people were like, I mean, literally like, screw you, I don't care, I get out. You can't apologize. Like, and I get that. I was like, yeah, I get what you're saying. But so I had to say, I'm sorry 1,000 times. People are like, well, what are you sorry for? That's what they always ask. Everyone, though, oh, I'm sorry. Well, what are you sorry for? And I'm like, oh, you know, for all the things Monty was talking about, like the way the church has treated you, and I'm so sorry, and it's ugly, and it's horrible. And some people were like, oh, yeah, cool. And some people were like, well, I don't accept your apology. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, I get it. And that was fine. But after like 2 hours of doing that, I was like, I'm not sorry because I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I'm not that. I'm not sorry anymore because I was so tired. But then I was like, but I am sorry because I'm a part of the thing that did the thing. And it was very heavy. I was like, man, that was a lot. And I thought, man, it is hard to have faith when the world looks like that sometimes. It's hard to have faith. Man, I went to a Bible college this 4 year and then some seminary. And like when you graduate, and everyone who's graduating for the most part, like 90% of them are going to be pastors, youth pastors, missionaries, something in the church world. And they tell you, hey, 6 out of 10 of you, the statistic is anyone who goes into the ministry, 6 out of 10 of you will quit it in 5 years. And I was like, why are you telling us this now in graduation? When you should have told us in freshman year, and they should have told us our income to debt ratio too. They didn't tell you that either. Fail. Sorry, government, you're never getting it. Anyways, they tell you that at graduation, 6 out of 10 of you are done. And the thing is, that statistic is true probably even more. Like all these people I know who graduated, who were going to like change the world for God in the Christian world, not only are they, most of them, not in ministry, most of them aren't even believers anymore. It's literally most of them. Whenever I meet someone who is still in, I'm like, oh, it's cool. Now, are you in the good way or the bad way? I have to always figure that out too, because I don't know. But man, what? If that is even, if that's the statistic, man, it's hard to have faith in this world right now. And then, you know, I grew up in the church, and I had this support group of a youth ministry. They were my best friends. And man, we were all like, you know, did all the things, and we liked God a lot. And man, almost all of them and none of them are into it anymore. So what is happening? I think the answer is about faith, how we've defined faith, because I think the world, and again, I cannot speak for Christianity throughout the centuries, but I can speak for the last 50 years, that the way that the mainstream church has defined faith like Saul in a way that is unattainable and is not real, and we have forgotten this David-like faith. And it's a grave error that we have taught. Because no one's, like, people are in, man, and we are a church, like, Jason and I like to joke that we call Legend everyone's last stop on the way out. Like, they're kind of on their way out, and they're like, I guess I'll check out that thing. And, man, if they don't stick here, they're like, yeah, I'm just done with it. Like, that happens a lot. And, I mean, no judgment. That's just how it is. We're just like, man, this is what we become. Because there are so many people, there's a word, a big kind of a buzzword that Jason hates, but called deconstruction. Like so many people who were, there was something in their life, a faith, that maybe when they're younger or whenever it was, that was real. And I believe wholeheartedly there was something real. And then faced with the real world, it did not, it didn't compute. And they just abandon it or they have to reconstruct it. To wrap it up, I have to give a shout out to Keith at Barrel Age Theology because he changed my whole opinion on what this means. Because I think before I've been like, well, I got a lot of faith and that's good in a Jerry Seinfeld way, I guess. And but it's not true. So Barrel Age Theology, man, you guys definitely need to check it out. It's tonight. And I went a couple weeks ago and Keith, the guy who's in charge of it, was talking about this idea. And at the time, because I don't like theology, I didn't think it was a big deal. I was like, yeah, whatever, it's a preposition. But no offense, Keith, because you changed me. But there's this phrase in the scriptures called having like faith in Jesus, faith in Christ. And that's just how it's translated today, to have faith in Christ. But scholars over the last few decades have actually come and like and said, hey, that's actually a really bad translation, because you could equally translate it, the faith of Christ, have the faith of Christ. And so we talked about that, and literally that night I was like, yeah, it was preposition, that's crazy. And so there's have faith in Christ, but then have the faith of Christ. But it sat with me all week, that week, and the weeks to follow, it became something very real to me where I was like, oh, man, faith in Christ is what we've taught that everyone's deconstructed, a faith that is about following a creed, doing the right thing, having the right doctrine. Man, I have to have this faith. I have to attain it. I have to get it. I have to act on it. But this, if we look at that phrase and say how it's translated, oh, this is have the faith of Christ. It's something that's inviting us to participate in. That there is Christ, there's Jesus who already has a faith, and he started something, and he's inviting all of us to partake in what he's already started. That we don't have to have it all the time. We don't have to be it all the time. We get to partake in the faith that he already started. And when we nail it, those waters, we are swimming that ocean. And that's the kind of faith. That's the kind of faith that changes people. That's the kind of faith that we don't lose. But there's this other kind of faith I think that we have, this Saul kind of faith that when it comes to the world, it just doesn't stack up. It just breaks. If you've been burnt by the church, if you've been burnt, and man, that you don't want a part of it, I hope that this place can be a place of healing. If you've never been burnt, you're like, man, I rock. I've never had the issues. Man, praise God for that. And then your issue is that there are people in our body who are hurt. There are people who've been burnt, and man, we need to be the healing for that. Man, we need to find faith, practice faith, and remember that Jesus had the faith. And we are just stepping into what he's already started. This is our goal. This is our virtue to practice. And so my prayer and my practice for us this week is that we engage in what it means to have faith in something way outside of us, way bigger than us. And that thing actively cares and loves about us. And it's not about the rules. It's not about the other stuff. It's just about how engaged we are with that. I hate this phrase. I'm going to end with this phrase because it's so dumb, but it's so true. That Christianity isn't a religion. We've called it a religion because of its systematic value. And it's so cheesy. But they're like, Christianity isn't a religion. It's a relationship. But it's so true. That, man, what we should be experiencing with Christ, with God, with the divine who created all of us, is a relationship. And I think that's the difference in this Saul David kind of faith. So practice that. I hope that helps you this week and helps you as you go through your journey from Jesus to death. I'm going to pray and the band's going to come up. And anytime during the band's up here, what we like to do is invite people to come down to take communion. There's bread, there's juice. This is why we gather. We believe there's power in this. And this is what makes us one body. If we really believe that phrase that, man, we are like a body and we all have different parts and different roles and we are exactly who we're supposed to be here. We come and we partake of this, and it's symbolic of us being one body. And it just reminds us that we are here for each other to heal and to sacrifice. I'm going to pray and then we'll be done. God, thank you for lessons learned. Thank you for the opportunity to have faith. Thank you for the opportunity to explore our faith. And Lord, my prayer is that we are not just dipping our toes in faith, we are not just waiting in faith, but we are fully submerging deeper and deeper every day, every hour, every week, as we become more and more engaged in your world and less engaged in the silliness of ours. That's cosmic, that's big. I pray that you help us in our journey to become more and more faithful people. Amen.